I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course. Robert Durst. Welcome to Grimley.
That's really funny.
Oh, man.
We're back at it.
We are back at it. We are back.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm great. This is weird.
You're in a backseat again.
I am. I am the backseat driver. Yeah. It is kind of a good exercise for me because I am a control freak.
Oh.
You know this.
I actually don't think I would say that about you.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's good. That fit it well.
Oh, he's back on the table again.
Go get him. You need like a Nerf gun. You need like a Nerf.
He's just, I sleep up here most of the time, so I don't understand the problem.
You got the cat on the dining room table.
Gross. But to be fair, when we sit at the table, first of all, most of the time the chairs are turned upside down.
That's true.
He still sits there anyway because he's a cat. They'll do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And then whenever I'm actually going to sit at the table, obviously the chairs come down, the table is cleaned thoroughly, and then a tablecloth is put over the table.
Yeah.
Which is what happened, and now he's sitting on the tablecloth.
He's like, oh, thank you for the nice...
So what's going to happen is I'm going to let him do his thing there, and before we eat, I'm going to take him and the tablecloth off, and then I will clean the table again, and then we will sit on it, we will eat at the table.
The constant struggles of a cat.
They just Mom. Don't give a fuck.
They really don't. But you know what? It's why we appreciate them.
I do.
Yeah. Because it's a... You know what? I can't be mad at you.
No. What? They really do bring so much joy.
Yeah. We've talked about pets so many times in this podcast.
Oops.
Listen. They're the greatest.
And you all agree. We haven't heard any pets on the podcast in a while. He's actually been behaved pretty well, generally.
He has, yeah.
And Coleman also just doesn't record with us very often.
No, not as much anymore, unfortunately.
We miss him.
Yeah. You say you miss him.
I do.
And then usually I feel like it's a bit of a...
When he's recording?
When I'm like, I'll bring him over. And you're like, do you want to bring him over?
Didn't you bring him from Thanksgiving?
I did. Yeah.
We had no problems.
You're right. I feel weird about bringing him over to people's houses. And so maybe I'm just internalizing that anxiety.
Well, listen. I don't have a dog. A dog will always be a different energy to me. But I like Coleman. He's always welcome.
Okay, that's good to know.
But I don't like the way they smell. Generally. Although Coleman doesn't smell.
No.
He really doesn't. But I'm not going to say who, but I was petting other dogs recently.
And they're stinky.
And also not Juna. Just in case
Jane's dog.
Jane is listening. Not Juna, who was a delight. someone else's dog.
Our friend's dog.
Who is not listening. I was like, oh, I don't. There's just. Yeah, it's on your hands after you touch. Yeah. Cats just don't have a scent like that.
No, generally not.
Yeah, unless something's wrong with it. And you can pet a cat and then you go about your life and your hands are. But when you pet a dog sometimes.
Yeah.
You know that you have pet a dog because there's some feeling. There's a filmy slime. Like a
dustiness.
Oiliness. It's gross.
Yeah.
Coleman is not one of those dogs. Coleman
gets bathed pretty often.
Yeah.
Because he is a dog that sleeps in my bed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
well,
I gotta make sure he's clean.
Do you have nights where you're like, ugh, you can't sleep up here because you haven't been bathed? Or no. You're just like, oh, I guess I'm changing the sheets tomorrow.
Yeah, it's usually that.
Oh, I can't. I cannot relate.
Well, I have a specific blanket that I keep on top of everything. Oh, he
sleeps on top. He's not like in the sheets with you.
No, he's not in the sheets. He is not that type of dog.
That is gross though, right? Oh, you know what? I'll take it back. I've said too much. I'm offending the dog.
No,
it's gross for the dog to sleep in the sheets because the hair is there.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I've never had a dog that's wanted to do that.
Too hot.
Well, mm-hmm. Coleman.
Little dogs do get cold, and I think they like it.
Yeah. Coleman has a sleeping bag for when we go backpacking. Mm-hmm. I am that extra.
Yes.
And half the time, he doesn't even sleep in that when we're outside.
So he sleeps on top of your...
He sleeps on top of it.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, like, when it's really cold, he'll get into it. But oh, that's really? Very... That's not very often. So I think he just gets too hot.
Yeah.
And I think that's
probably
why...
They don't need it.
Yeah. He's, like, a long-haired dog.
Yeah.
He's got an undercoat.
Yeah.
But... What was I going with this? Oh, but so I don't know how I would feel about him wanting to be in the sheets with me.
I think that's a little gross personally, but I also don't sleep with a lot of clothing on.
Mm-hmm.
When possible, I sleep with no clothing on.
Right.
And I just, because I get hot also.
Yeah.
And I'll get all twisted up and I eventually will take my clothes off anyway.
Yeah. It is the worst when you're wearing like a t-shirt and like you turn over and the t-shirt doesn't follow you.
And yes. Like, and it never will. Or like you got like a baggy pajama pant on.
Yeah.
And then it's like all halfway twisted up your knee. And you got to like grab it with your toe and slide it down.
Yes.
You got the same with the other toe. And then God forbid you turn over. It's all fucked.
Yeah. It's all fucked.
I can't be.
We need to bring back the Victorian.
Like a dress?
Dress. Ebenezer Scrooge dresses.
Okay, so when I had my ankle surgery, I bought like a house dress.
Yeah.
That's buttoned up. And then there is a, like an old, I wish I had to have thought about Googling this. There is an old nursery rhyme called Wee Willy Winky. And it's like,
what the fuck?
Wee Willy, it's a Christmas rhyme. Welcome to Grimley.
Welcome to Grimley.
This is Meg.
I am Missy.
And I have the reins. I have the bull by the horns.
You have something by the horns.
Episode number 2. And we're going to finish our discussion about the life and crimes of Robert Durst.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you recap us from your memory where we're at? What has happened? If not.
I mean, so a lot happened.
Yes.
We got shark eyes.
Yes. It's most important.
Yeah. The beady, dark, little shark eyes.
And the blinking.
Yes. The blinking, the shark eyes. We've got cross-dressing.
Is it cross-dressing if he's not doing drag?
Is it?
I think it is.
Okay.
I think it still is. Drag is an one art. Thing.
Yeah.
Cross-dressing is one thing.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of like ways people have described that in the past, which is offensive and no longer fitting. But I do think in this occasion, the man is just cross-dressing. He's not a trans person.
No.
He's not someone drag. That,
yeah.
He's
just dressing up
I
as a woman.
I wouldn't elevate it to say it was drag. I think he's cross-dressing.
Yeah. No, I feel like calling it drag would be a little bit of an insult to drag.
Huh?
Yeah.
Because I don't think he was even doing makeup.
Okay.
Weird. He might have been doing makeup.
Yeah. We've got shark eyes. We've got three murders.
Two murders, one disappearance, technically, but yes. Probably a third likely murder.
Kathleen, yes. Mm-hmm. Kathleen is technically never found. You're right. But we've got a man who has... some deep-seated nepotism and who is been skating along and causing trauma and a lot of upheaval of other people's lives and is clearly getting away with it. And then he steals a fucking hoagie and that's how he gets caught.
Yep.
It's the craziest fucking thing.
Yeah, he's on the lam and he got caught with a hoagie.
With a hoagie because he tried to steal it
even though... A pre-made refrigerated sandwich. He didn't even order the sandwich. He picked it up.
Yeah, when the grab and goes.
Yes.
Yeah, and those are usually never good.
I'm never going to order a grab and go unless it is just butter or brie and maybe some ham and prosciutto on some bread.
Okay.
Like a very Frenchy style.
Yeah, like a...
But if there's mayo, if there's lettuce...
Yeah.
Absolutely not. If there's a tomato on there,
ugh.
I need it fresh for me, sliced fresh.
You are really the sandwich guru, so...
I do love a sandwich.
You do love a sandwich.
But you're right. You said it. A grab-and-go is not the ideal type of sandwich. And this is a fancy guy who's used to eating a lot of fancy food, right. No doubt.
Probably some canapes.
I know. Like, some caviar.
It's weird.
He's traveled the world.
Yeah. He stole a sandwich. He had a shit ton of money on him and two guns.
I didn't even need to steal.
It's the dumbest logic. There is no logic. I think this man is just like manic and insane.
Spiraling.
So yeah, that is my recap of the Jinx. It's
fantastic.
All right, well, the Jinx, we get Robert started Durst.
After I refill.
Please hold. After these messages.
Okay.
All right, recap of Robert Durst. Slash yes. Dorothy.
All right, episode 2. Act 1. Okay, and this is the Gins part of my, like, the pop culture aspect of this.
Yeah, I feel like that we didn't really talk about the first one. We just talked about the facts, right?
We talked about, yes,
yeah.
The facts, the horrors, really. But this story is such a pop culture phenomenon because of all of the things I'm about to tell you.
And it ended because of that stuff, too.
Oh, yes, I will.
Which is crazy.
Yes, it's which okay. We will get to.
Yeah.
Exactly why.
Yeah.
We're going to start in 2010.
Okay.
I mentioned in the very beginning, like the intro, that there was a Hollywood movie involved and,
yes.
and Ryan Gosling.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2010, American music composer and filmmaker Andrew Jarecki releases a movie called All Good Things, which is a film inspired by Robert Durst's life and Kathy's disappearance.
Right.
Peach, go on.
Real quick. I feel like you say Ryan Gosling, but we also talk about our girl, Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, yes.
Who is also in that movie.
Yeah. Kirsten Dunst. Plays Kathleen.
Yes.
And Robert Durst
is played by
Ryan Gosling.
Are they... I don't know if I've actually ever seen this movie. Are they called Kathleen and Robert in the movie?
They have different names, but I have seen it twice.
Okay.
But I don't remember what their names are.
Okay.
The last time I watched it, I only watched like 3/4 of it. I didn't finish it. So this kind of renews public interest in the cases. So when we left off,
as it does usually,
when we left off, it was like 2006 after he'd gone
through all of his parole.
He was finished entirely.
Yeah.
So like, and so just he a was few years later,
just flying under the radar at this point, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And like everyone, it was a secret, but a known secret that he had basically killed two people and gotten away with it.
Yes.
At this point.
So I think Susan Berman's murder wasn't really attached.
Not yet, right?
Officially or in any capacity. But people who, like, had been following the story would have known.
Because she's connected to him.
She's connected to him.
Yes.
It is brought up in the movie. In the movie.
Okay.
It starts with them. They meet. He's quite charming in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Gosling makes it charming.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. They get married. And it definitely highlights the abuse in the relationship. It shows there's... Who is it? Fuck. Oh, my God. I have to say her name because it's so offensive if I don't.
Oh, the IMDb.
Yeah. I'm looking up...
Who played who?
Yeah. Who played Susan? Because Susan has a...
Oh, a big part of it.
Oh, God. Hold on. Lily Robb plays...
Susan. Okay. Or okay, Susan's so, character.
Sorry, Susan's character. Okay, yeah. So now I'm looking at IMDb. They call Robert David.
Okay.
David Marks and Katie Marks. So it's David and Katie. And then Deborah Lerman is who would have been Susan.
Oh, okay.
There is also a Morris Black character in the movie.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And he basically... He tells the entire story
up to 2000, like,
yes, up until current day, where yeah. he's like,
this is all the shit that's happened that
all
has occurred,
the shit that has happened, yes,
and it's fictionalized, but this actually did happen,
and it's maybe a pretty good guess as to how it actually went down.
It was such a good guess that Robert Durst sees this film and says, I love it, right?
I love it,
yeah,
and he calls Jarecki and he says, don't you want to interview me? Don't you want to hear what I have to say about it? And that's how the fucking jinx starts.
Yeah, it's insane.
So just to back up just a moment.
Okay.
The film renews public interest in the case.
Yeah.
I also feel like I should give Jarecki a little bit more of a moment here. Because okay. I'm going to go on to talk about him a lot. And he's super instrumental as to why Robert had, at least for a moment in time, been held accountable for his crimes.
Yeah.
He's also responsible for what is I'm going to say horrific because it was traumatizing and horrific content. Mm-hmm. But another HBO documentary called Capturing the Freedmans. I don't know if you've seen this. It's another true crime about Arnold Freeman, who is a child rapist.
Oh.
And it's a whole thing. It's a multi-series doc, very similar and rough. So I say horrific because it's just like super icky.
Yeah,
and
that's
just like the fast
stuff that we don't really. Yeah.
He also co-wrote the theme song for the 90s drama series Felicity.
Random.
Yeah. Well, he's a composer.
He is a composer.
And we have not talked about the jinx yet. I will get into it.
Yeah.
But the theme song is so good.
And I remember it.
You'll have please Google it on your way home because it's so good. I feel like that's like part of the reason that the doc did so well.
Yeah, it was really well made.
It was huge. Yes, and it was very, very well made, but it's always like a huge thing, and I think people loved the fucking song.
Yeah, a good intro really does.
It steals the deal.
It really does steal the deal.
And he's a composer, and so he's used to doing these things. Yeah. So he did the music for Felicity. Okay, we don't really have time to talk about the movie here, but I will say this, as we just did. It made enough of an impression on Bob that Bob called him up and was like, let's talk about it. I bet you'd like to interview me. And Jarecki was like, okay, sounds good, but like, how about we film it and we make it a documentary? And he was like, awesome, let's do that.
What a fucking weirdo. Narcissist.
It's going to come back because, like,
it bites him in the ass.
It's 100% bites
so
him
fucking
in the
hard.
Ass.
We haven't really talked about it yet, but
we
like,
have not. We will get into it. Just I think that's the next on the docket.
Okay.
So the jinx is born out of this thing. This I have to repeat it, and I will probably say it again.
Yeah.
This was Bob's idea,
over and over. It's crazy.
So they start filming in like 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we can talk about the jinx.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite. Okay, so February 8th, 2015, HBO premieres The Jinx, and it's subtitled The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. It's a documentary series directed by Andrew Jarecki. It's a 6-episode series, and it delves into his family history, all of the things that we talked about in episode one.
The life, the murders.
And a lot of contradictions in his narrative of
Robert Durst's narrative.
Yes, okay. Things. Again, here my next note is, what can I say? The season one intro song is iconic. It is so good.
There's Should we just play it?
Woo! I don't know if we can legally play it.
Oh, that's true.
I tried to do a little bit of research about this, and there's a lot of like, oh, if it's less than 5 seconds, if it's less than 7 seconds, I actually don't know.
Okay.
And let's we see. Shouldn't, but you should Google it.
Yeah, we're poor little ladies. We don't have money. Don't sue us.
But it's very good.
Okay.
And just, again, the jinx is the reason that why Robert Durst eventually dies in prison.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, he dies in prison.
I mean,
and it is entirely because of this thing.
Fucking series. It's literally been 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's not that big of a spoiler at this point.
Thank you. Accurate. So every time I watch it, the audacity of this human that amazes
absolutely.
Me.
The fact that he was like, sign me up. Let's talk about the shit I fucking did.
And he says the craziest things. And like, there's no way, unless we like recapped every single episode, that we could talk about it. So I do have a little highlight reel that I'll run through. But
As we should.
As but. You say, it's the eyes, it's the blinking. And he's funny.
Yeah.
He has a kind of witty, sarcastic, snarky sense of humor.
It's very New York, right?
Yes, it is. He's quick.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit self-deprecating.
Which are all things that we are both into, for sure. As, like, just people in general. And we do it to ourselves.
Listen, he got off. He was acquitted of a murder.
Yes,
and so I think that they liked him.
Mm-hmm.
He took the stand in the Morris Black trial. I think that went a long way because he's charming. And you know what? A lot of sociopaths,
they are charming. They can wear the mask and initially, for sure. It's a big thing,
So that makes it just the most interesting documentary.
I wonder if this show was like studied in psychology classes now or something.
Maybe, yeah.
I feel like it could be for sure. Just be like,
it really does feel like you get just unfettered access to this person
who did horrible things and who like.
Because he talks about it. They're asking him about the crimes. And so he talks about it in a way that's, I think he's feigning relatability.
It's just crazy.
Okay. But he's still caught in a bazillion lies.
Yeah.
So, yes, here's a mini highlight reel of all the shit he steps in on camera during the jinx.
Let's do it.
Okay. When asked what he would say to Kathy's mother now, like modern day, what would you say to Kathy's mom? He says, quote, "I feel bad the way I treated you. That you're a good person and I'm complicit in Kathy's not being here."
I forgot about that.
That's fucking insane.
That is insane.
So later, when asked specifically if he had anything to do with Kathy's disappearance, he says no. Okay. So like he says,
"I'm complicit, but no."
And then it's, "But no, I didn't do it." Anyway, it's crazy. He admits after being caught that he lied to police about speaking to Kathy at their Manhattan apartment the night she went missing so that police would, quote, "leave him alone."
Wow. I didn't know he did that. Yep. I forgot about that.
Admits it on camera.
Like I said, I watched this documentary, like, during COVID lockdown.
Yeah.
It's been 5 years.
Well, yeah. Exactly. And these are all things that he admits to. Yeah. And there's a ton of other evidence that are just like, okay, here's this and like other people providing evidence. But I'm just going to highlight shit that Bob does.
Yeah. So he tells police that he did not actually talk to Kathy.
He did not actually talk to Kathy. There was also a moment like early on in the investigation. So if you can imagine, he's this wealthy guy from this family and he tells one side of a story and people just chose to believe him.
Yeah. And just to recap, he told police that he dropped Kathy off at the train station and that later that evening she called him from the Manhattan apartment they owned. Yes. Right. Okay. But now he's saying that like she never actually called.
There was more to that story actually, which I didn't go into, but the more to that story is that he went to a friend's house and had some drinks with the friends.
Okay.
And then left the friend's house and then called her from a payphone and spoke to her from the payphone.
That's his new story?
Well, that's maybe one of the other stories.
That's the other version of the story you told. Okay. Yes.
So his friend was like, that didn't happen. He never came to our house.
Interesting.
And they didn't lie for him.
Yeah.
He lied for himself and they just didn't.
They didn't corroborate.
Yes. Or they didn't.
Did they not do that?
No, they didn't correct the narrative. They just let it be.
Oh, they never even went to police or anything?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I don't know.
So many people. Yeah, or just whatever. What happened to this woman?
And they're probably friends with her, too.
Yes.
That's fucked.
I know.
Oh, God.
There's so much coldness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so he lies to the police. He did not see her. He didn't speak to her
right
after she got to the apartment, and he admitted that he just lied about it so they would leave him alone.
And I think it's safe to assume that he probably didn't drop her off at the train station.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, go on.
Were there not receipts for train tickets, or?
I don't think that anybody did a whole lot of
looking, searching.
Yeah.
Wow. It feels like it's so easy to figure out if that actually happened. The phone call and the train ticket. Those are things that have a trail in some shape or form, and no one just didn't do anything. This was a fucking woman, like,
certainly becoming a doctor. Spend one full episode just talking about the specifics of that case and that investigation. Yeah, it is.
That's insane.
Yeah.
God, I hate this world sometimes.
Yeah, okay. And it's not the first time. It's not the last time.
No, for sure. Yeah, we definitely talked about that a few times.
Whatever department was responsible for looking into this did not do a lot. So there was also this story. Sometimes it's
just like sheer laziness.
It comes up a couple of times over the course of the Jinx season 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. But I believe I'm not 1,000% positive, but I believe that it has been suggested. Okay, so there's this another story that's it's part of his narrative. Is that she was also seen in the lobby of their Manhattan apartment that night or like in the next day or two by security. I believe that night they're saying that she made it there or she left the next morning.
Yeah.
And the security guard at the apartment complex or saw her. Was it a concierge? The doorman. There was a person.
Yeah.
Yes, that saw her.
Okay.
Now, Andrew Jarecki and the Jinx get in touch with that person who says that they never saw it.
Interesting.
But it was just sort of accepted. And was it like, I believe that the story is that the spokesperson said that it happened.
Okay.
And it was printed in a newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And there's also in season two, during Susan Berman's trial, which we'll talk about later, a phone call is unearthed where Susan is on the phone talking to another, like a journalist.
Okay.
It's really hard to describe it unless you've heard it. But they're talking about what could have happened to Kathy before it's released. So it's like the family spokesperson and a true crime journalist having a conversation and coming up with a story that will become the narrative for what happens to her.
Oh.
And it is on film, or it is recorded, and then the John Lewin, the deputy prosecutor, has access to this tape.
Interesting.
And we'll talk a little bit about that later.
Yeah.
But it's good that we've mentioned it because it makes you feel like Susan was a complicit.
Yeah. Or I would say at the participant. Least complicit, it sounds like.
In covering it up.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go back to the highlight reel.
Yeah, I was like, I can't even remember how we got here, but there's so many layers.
Yeah.
Okay, so he was also caught on camera reciting a lie about whether he intentionally lied to the jury in Morris Black's trial, and also if he was coached by his attorneys. So he's captured whispering under his breath, "I didn't knowingly, purposefully lie. I didn't knowingly, purposefully lie." And he says it about four times under his breath where he's...
On camera.
He's got a hot mic and they're taking a break from the interview and he's... purposefully
lie. And that is like a
foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing to the fucking end of this.
Yes, to the piece de resistance.
Seriously. What this fucking thing is known for.
Yes.
Okay. And just to reiterate, Morris Black is the guy that was found in Galveston, Texas, in the bay in pieces that he was acquitted for murdering because it was supposed to be quote unquote self-defense.
Yeah. So the line of questioning in the doc at this time is
they're talking about Morris Black.
Did your lawyers tell you to lie? Like, how did you, because you went on stand and he was like, eh. And then so he says this thing about four times on the hot mic and then his because it's all recorded and it's on camera. His team that's there. Mm-hmm. So I think they did 1 or 2 days of a long day of interviews.
Yeah.
And then they do one more. And this is season one. They do one long day of interviews. And then they call him back and they do one final interview. So in the first series where it's the majority, episodes 1 through 5, he's there with his lawyer and his team.
Yeah. And they're like
keeping tapping
him on the shoulder, being like, "Hey, that's too much. You shouldn't do this.
So let's take a break," or whatever.
Yeah.
So like they rush in and they're like, they just basically jump in and they're like, "Shut the fuck up. We can hear everything you're saying. The mic is hot." And he acknowledges that. And then he wraps up the scene by saying, "I didn't tell the whole truth. Nobody tells the whole truth."
Wow.
And he's interviewed for 5 episodes. And he's just saying the craziest shit the entire time.
Is there something off? I mean, there is something off.
Is it a cognitive issue? Like, what the
Like, what is going on with this man?
I don't know. Ugh. So anyway, if I haven't convinced you to watch it, if you haven't already seen it,
you should definitely go watch it.
We see a lot of courtroom footage. There's a lot of deposition footage. There's police investigation interviews, direct interviews with the victims and families.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Okay.
So that is how I've decided to sum up
the Jinx.
Jinx, at least season one.
Yeah.
And season one and two, as best I could.
Yeah. You can't do the whole thing, right? Mm-mm. It's what, 12 episodes?
12 episodes total. 12
1-hour episodes.
Yes.
Yeah, so we can't... We're not going to spend 12 hours talking about the Jinx, okay?
All right. So now we're going to talk about the cadaver note, which is leads us to this build. Now, I have photos, and I'll show you... we can look at them now, but I'll probably wait to show you until really...
Okay. The cadaver note is the note that was found with Susan.
Yes.
Okay.
The cadaver note.
Yeah, I was going to say, can we talk about that again?
Okay, so Susan Berman was murdered in her home.
Mm-hmm.
And a letter was sent to the LAPD and it was postmarked for the day they believe that she was murdered.
Okay.
So they got it a few days later.
Right.
They open it and it is addressed to the LAPD, and then they open it and it is all caps and it says 1527 Benedict Canyon.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills.
And Beverly Hills Beverly Drive. Spelled wrong.
Right. And then it's is cat cadaver.
Yeah. Okay.
But Beverly
okay.
Hills, which is her address. So basically it's just a note that's got an it's address and a word that says a cadaver.
There's a body dead at this address.
And it's also a strange word for the average person to use. That comes up a lot too, where it's, who would say cadaver?
Right.
Somebody in the medical field, or maybe somebody who knew someone in the medical field. Interesting.
Foreshadowing.
Yes. Yes, but Beverly, for her address, is spelled with an extra E.
Yes,
B-E-V-E-R-L-E-Y.
Yeah, okay, I remember. Okay.
All right, during filming The Jinx Season 1, Jarecki interviews Sareb Kaufman. And Sareb is Susan Berman's stepson.
Okay.
Because like I said, she remains in a relationship with them.
And they were close with Robert, too.
Yes, they were.
Yeah,
so she was married to Sareb's father when they split up. They remained close. They remain close with Bob as a connection of Susan. They called him Uncle Bobby, I believe. And I heard this in passing, or I can't explicitly remember. I did not look it up. It's not in my notes. But I believe that he paid for some of their schooling.
Okay.
Bob did well by these children.
Yeah.
So when she died, all of her remaining possessions were left to the Kaufman children. So he's interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, you're like, maybe I'm looking for old photos. You start going back through the old stuff.
Yeah.
So he does.
Yeah.
And he goes and looks through Susan's possessions. So in episode 5, he comes across a letter she's received from Bob from March of 2000. I'll remember she's murdered around Christmas time.
Right. Okay.
So in March 2000, that same year, the envelope is addressed to Susan at her Benedict Canyon home. And the handwriting is in block letters with the Beverly misspelled with an additional E. It's an exact fucking match to the infamous cadaver note from Susan's murder.
Okay. I forgot about this.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's how they find it. Her stepson finds this letter that is from
because
Bob.
Because he's doing an interview for this fucking documentary.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he would not be interviewed.
Yeah.
He would not have gone back to look through that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that the police have this, despite the fact that
they should have it. Yeah.
And it's only because he's being interviewed for The Jinx that he sees this and he's, oh my fucking God. So he basically calls Jarecki and he's, I need you to like do a gut check. What is this? And they look at it and now they're like, this is it. This proves it.
This is a smoking gun, for lack of a better word.
Completely.
Yeah.
And okay. So it's an exact match.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exact match because they get a handwriting expert. Not that you even need one.
Yeah.
Here they are. I'll show them to you right now.
Holy shit. It's... Yeah, it's the misspelling is. Wow. Fucking idiot. Sorry.
It all happens fucking live on camera in 2015. It all happens at that time. It happened earlier, obviously, but America's seeing this unfold in fucking real time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, so in an earlier episode of The Jinx, when Bob is being interviewed about Susan's murder, first of all, this makes the whole thing even that much better. Okay,
right.
So when he's interviewed about Susan's murder, he denies having anything to do with it. But he understands
why people might think
suspects.
Yeah.
And he says, she was my spokesman. All of a sudden, she's dead. It's like, I shut her up. He says that on camera. So he's just like playing along, like, I get it, I'm a normal guy, I've got nothing to do with it, but I totally understand why everyone thinks I might be guilty.
Why the conclusion?
Totally. Yeah. So when he specifically asks about the cadaver note, he agrees on camera that whoever wrote the note definitely killed Susan. Somebody had a plan to do this. They had to go to her house, do what they did, and now you're taking this big risk. You're writing a note that only the killer could have written.
I love the commitment to the voice. I couldn't do it.
Only the killer could have written.
Emphasize that. Yes.
And he says it.
He says it.
He fucking wrote it. It's insane. say. You're just like, are you serious, dude? Okay, so he's sitting in this...
Yeah, in the interview.
Yes, and he shows it to him. First of all, Jarecki turns this info over to the police. We don't want to get involved.
Right.
He knew they were already investigating the murder, and he turns it over. But
yeah.
First, he wants to get one more interview with Bob.
Does he, like, he photocopies it, right?
He takes a photocopy.
Yeah.
Yes. He actually puts the whole thing in a safe deposit box. He gets a safe deposit box, and he puts it in there so that it cannot disappear.
Okay.
Yes, he's going to turn it over to the police, but he wants to get one more interview out of Bob.
Yeah.
So they did the first five interviews. And then this thing happens, and he's, okay, I have to get him on camera. One more fucking time. And they're basically already done filming.
Yeah.
And he's got to figure out, like, how do I get him back in front of the camera? And Bob doesn't want to do it. Bob is over it, and he doesn't want to do it. But they basically spend the next month trying to get him back, and they do. Okay.
He gets him back to interview.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when Bob shows up, he shows up alone. Without his lawyers, because he thinks, oh, I'm just going to come and look at some photos and we're going to do some post-production
like a final conclusion.
Yeah, yeah, so he comes by himself. Okay, so in 2013, the filmmakers of The Jinx shared this evidence with law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And then as a result of that, the LAPD renews their investigation into the Susan. So, like, this evidence alone is the reason they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to keep looking
at this. Smoking gun. It's the smoking gun.
Okay, so here's the bombshell. March 14th, 2015, he's arrested in New Orleans.
Wait, are we not going to talk about what happens on camera?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The timeline is actually interesting here.
Okay.
So America has seen episodes... Okay, so it airs... Hold on, I have to go back because I actually spent a lot of time looking at a calendar.
Okay.
February 8th, 2015 is when episode one airs.
Okay.
It's a weekly... Remember, this is not Netflix.
Yeah.
This is a weekly. 5 weeks later would be March 15th, mm-hmm. which is the 5 weeks, which was when the sixth episode is going to air.
Yeah.
Well, the day before, on March 14th, Bob is arrested in New Orleans on a warrant related to Susan Berman's murder.
Oh, shit.
So he's arrested the day before. So America has seen episodes one through five.
And then the Bob story. Is
arrested on the 14th.
Wow.
And then episode six airs on the 15th. And we've already seen the spoiler mm-hmm. that alludes to him saying,
kill them all, of course.
Yes.
It's just... Do you think they did that on purpose?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I was curious. Because it, like...
Yes, I do.
How did they not?
They definitely did it on purpose.
But you know what? Thanks for giving us this.
I know, this moment. Okay. Okay. So March 14th, these are in the... So it's, like, hard to talk about this as I'm, like, trying to keep a linear timeline, but it all is happening at the same time. And backwards. Okay, so March 14th, he's arrested in... New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he's fucking doing in New Orleans.
Yeah.
March 15th, the next day.
New Orleans' March is actually very fun.
Okay, he was having a good old time.
Yeah,
he's not that far from Galveston. He was probably just having a fucking...
The one time I went to New Orleans, it was in March. And it was great weather. Sorry. Keep going.
I love it.
It was like 70. It was perfect.
Totally. Okay, so the next day, the final episode of The Jinx airs. And in the episode, Jarecki shows him side-by-side notes. He puts this in front of him.
He's like, hey, dude.
This is what we found. Yes. And Bob acknowledges that, like, the spelling is the same, but mm-hmm. he's like, that's, like, the only similarity. He's not, like, seeing... He's like, block letters, someone's disguising their handwriting.
Right.
What's one from another? Like, who could say that was the same? But the spelling. He agrees in spelling.
Right.
But he also is, like, visibly uncomfortable now. Mm-hmm. He's doing the blinking.
Yes.
And he starts fidgeting a lot, and he... fucking starts belching. He starts speaking and he's burping. It's like the man's
having, like, a visceral reaction,
like the volcano that lives inside of him is bubbling over.
Yeah.
And it's so uncomfortable. So they basically spend, like, however many hours, like an hour or two that day or whatever, how many hours together that day.
Yeah.
And he shows him this towards the tail end of the interview.
Right.
And then the interview just ends where he admits that he's uncomfortable, or, like, he's uncomfortable. He admits that he's very similar. He agrees. Yeah. I can't say, like, because Jarecki's like, well, which one did you write? And he's like, I know I wrote that one, but I didn't write this one.
Yeah.
And that's while they're, like,
side by side
spelled out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a moment where he isolates. Like, he's on a different fucking Xerox. He has got just Beverly. and Beverly, or Beverly Hills and Beverly Hills on the same sheet, and he slides it in front of me. So which one did you write? And he stares at it, and he's, can you say which one you wrote or you didn't write? And he said, no.
So that is so fucking smart.
It's so smart. It's so awkward.
I don't know how it, like, how did you think to do that?
Oh, they had a month to rehearse. Oh.
Yeah, I guess it'd be a long
time. How are we going to get
him? I don't know if I would have thought of that.
Dude, well, they've got a, like, team of people.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Just how are we going to do this? Like,
yeah, just the zoom in on the one word, be like, do you know which one you wrote, is so fucking smart.
Without a lawyer.
It's such a gotcha moment.
It's such a gotcha. That's what I'm saying. It's the best.
This is why The Jinx is known.
It's so fucking
to
good.
To be, like, one of the best, like, true crime documentaries.
And it's just because he wouldn't shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah.
Okay. So the interview wraps and Bob gets up to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And it's in the bathroom that he didn't learn from his hot mic moment earlier.
Which is even, like, better.
You know.
Like, you did this before, you dumb fuck. Anyways, keep going.
Okay, so he's caught on a hot mic, and I'm gonna say it.
Yeah.
And I wish we could have played it. This is why I started researching, because I was like, there's no way to really describe it.
Yeah.
Except to hear him, because it's like, it's a 30 seconds or, like, maybe 45 seconds or a minute of time where there's no image. It's just like the cameras are down. He still happens to have his mic pack on, and he's in the bathroom by himself.
Like, it cuts to black almost, right?
Yes. It's just black and you just see the words. Okay. So I'm going to do my very best. Okay.
You're doing great with the Bob voice. Okay.
There it is. You're caught. You're right, of course, but you can't imagine. There's, like, a pause for a while, and it says, arrest him. And the water runs. I don't know what's in the house. What a disaster. And then it's, like, belching and grunting and a lot of pause. He was right. I was wrong. And the puppy... like a lot of obvious, like, water and, like, hands on the face
and like, he's, like, panicking,
groaning, and he says, what the hell did I do? Kill them all, of course. And that's it.
It's, I remember something about me is I'm a person who doesn't, I, like, spoil things for myself. I'll go into TV shows, movies, whatever, knowing how it ends.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I do that. I just do it.
Wait, you like to know how it ends? You try to find out how it ends?
I usually find the spoilers, and then I'm like, oh, this actually seems interesting, even though I know how it gets ended.
Okay.
I watched The Jinx not knowing how it ended.
Oh, you did?
I did. And it was, like, 5 years after it came out. I don't know how I didn't know.
Okay.
But I just remember sitting there. Because the screen goes black after he says that. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I sat there mouth agape. My roommate at the time comes out. He's, what are you doing? See the reflection of myself in the TV. Just, like, sitting there. Be like, did he just confess on a fucking hot mic?
And that's everyone's question. Is that a confession?
It's... fucking sounds like it.
Yes, it does.
I guess you can argue it, but it's just...
And is he talking to his alter ego?
Right.
Is he talking to himself? He's always playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
He's fucking talking. He's fucking talking.
He says, killed them all, of course. It's...
What the hell did I do?
Yeah.
Killed them all, of course.
It's insane.
I know, and it's... You could say... He's talking as if he's like, what is the perception going to be?
Yes, for
sure.
The
perception is going to be, what did I do? I killed them all, of course.
Yes.
What did he do?
Let's be real.
He fucking killed them all.
Yeah, we're defense lawyers, right, at this point.
Yeah.
That is the exact defense he would take. Be like, he is perceiving how this is going to be taken from the public eye.
Yes, exactly. He knows this is being recorded.
Oh, my goodness. He knows it's going to be a big fucking deal in the court of public
opinion.
And
again, we wouldn't be here If Bob didn't call Andrew Jarecki and say,
let's do this docuseries.
Don't you want to hear what I have to say?
Yeah, like, about your movie? Talk to me. Yeah.
And this is a lesser known fact. He actually did commentary for the movie itself. Oh,
yeah,
I know
that. Yeah.
Yes. And it's not in the Jinx, but he is on camera talking about a pretty violent scene in the movie, mm-hmm. where Ryan Gosling, they're like at a party at her family's home.
Yeah.
And they did talk about this in the Jinx, but they didn't explicitly talk about Bob's commentary.
Yeah.
They just talk about like how he didn't want to spend a lot of time with her family. Mm-hmm. Susan was really nasty about Kathy's family, and so was Bob.
Yeah.
Treating them like they were these like low class, basic, like loser type of working class people.
Yeah.
And like Susan, and again, I alluded to it earlier, that sort of on the recorded conversation she had with the journalist. Mm-hmm. She's, oh, not this family. They were just a bunch of like, they were married to firefighters. They drank a lot, like just talked really down on them. First of all, as if like, people married to like our first responders are trashy in any way. Right? It's totally insane.
It is insane.
And Bob didn't like to spend time with her family.
Yeah.
And she was close with her family.
Yeah.
And he said that he would, when they would go over and spend time with her family, that he would put a time limit on it. It was either 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours.
Yeah.
And when the time limit was up, he was ready to go. It's this scene in the movie where they're hanging out for a family birthday or dinner or something, mm-hmm. and they're there, and like he is ready to leave, and she's not ready to leave yet. So he goes to the car, and this is Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst in this scene, which is fictionalized, but it's not all that different than what Bob literally said on camera.
Okay.
In an interview, he says basically like he comes storming back in the house, grabs her by the hair in front of her entire family, and drags her out of the house.
Jesus.
Into the car, and they leave. And Bob has done commentary on the film, mm-hmm. and was like, yeah, more or less happened like that.
I don't want to blame anybody besides him, but like, did she not have like, brothers or anybody in that house have been like, I'm gonna go,
I don't know,
beat that man's, actually as a, even
she
like,
has a brother, he's a younger brother, actually his name is Jim, and we'll talk a little bit about Jim later.
Even just as if my sister, I saw that happening, can I go get something and beat the shit out of that man?
I know, you do think, I know, and I do feel like the money and the time period.
Yeah, I guess the time period is a big part of it. I guess in like modern that's era. Their
business, and
man, I don't feel like I'd have a hard time not going out there with a baseball bat after that moment.
It's pretty trash.
It's pretty trash. And I'm not trying to be like her family did anything wrong. Like you said, it's,
I mean, listen, did they do something wrong? No, but would they do things differently?
For sure. Yeah. Hindsight is always
no doubt
a bitch. Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So
we got act do
two, episode two. Okay. So we're going to talk about season two and the trial.
Yeah. This is the season I did not watch because okay, so I knew you were doing this.
Episode one, season one is wrapped, and it wraps with this bombshell.
Right.
Killed them all, of course.
And everyone's he's like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah. And then it was it's years later. So Bob's arrested in 2015, but he doesn't face trial for a few years because of extradition stuff that I'm not going to get into. It's boring.
The legal system is stupid.
We already talked about a lot of stuff. But anyways, there were some gun charges in Louisiana. He had a gun on him.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So on March 4th.
Who keeps giving this fucking old man guns?
Oh, he just buys them. He's not a felon. He was acquitted.
But he was on parole.
Oh, do you only have to go on parole for felonies? Maybe.
I think if you go on parole for anything, you can't have a gun after that.
Really?
I'm pretty sure.
I really don't know that much about parole.
I don't know either. I've never been on parole, but I'm imagining if you're in the system for something like a gun charge, like he had originally.
At least $100 million. You can literally get anything.
It just, I just want to know where he keeps getting the guns.
Well,
sorry.
He keeps losing the guns.
Yeah, clearly he is getting arrested with the guns. What are you fucking doing?
Why do you need two guns? Why do you need so many guns? All you need to do is take your money bags and you fucking skip town. I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either.
Okay. March 4th, 2020 is when the murder trial
officially starts.
Begins. Yes, for Susan Berman's murder. But it's immediately delayed because it's March 2020 and COVID is a problem.
Right. We have talked about this in a few episodes where COVID has really put a damper on situations.
Yes, changed every thing, every part of life that people had to go to the office for.
Yeah.
Even now.
Yeah. COVID is still affecting us.
Okay, so it resumes again in May of 2021.
Okay.
Wow, over a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, so season two of The Jinx follows, like, the investigation and the public trial of Susan's murder.
Okay.
And in season two, we meet Deputy DA John Lewin, who I feel like I talked a little bit about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He tries the case. He's quite a character. I think if you watch it, like, he has cop energy.
Yeah, but he's a DA.
Yes.
Interesting.
I know. But I'm like, that's a fucking cop.
Yeah.
He's also maybe a total G.
Cop?
Maybe.
I don't know.
He's quite on top of it. So
okay.
He specializes in cold cases and no body circumstantial cases. So I already knew about Robert Durst.
Yeah.
I was an LA Kathleen. Guy.
Yeah.
And now that I've got this evidence, like, oh, this is totally my jam.
Yeah.
So in a recorded interview, he flat out asks Bob, like in one of their, after he's arrested,
mm-hmm.
why did you do the jinx?
You stupid bitch. Why did you do this?
What made you talk to them? And that's completely like the $1 million question. We've yeah. already been talking about yeah. it. Why do you do this? I think it's an ego thing.
I think it's an ego thing too. I think this guy is a classic narcissist.
Classic. The most dangerous type.
Yeah, for sure.
But Bob can't answer why he
decided to do it.
He said, I'm still trying to put that together in my own mind. Yeah. And like repeatedly. Okay, so like we spent a lot of time in season two for like people. There's because listen, he's not being interviewed.
I was gonna ask.
So how do they do it?
Yeah,
they interview everybody else.
Okay.
And they all of the prison phone calls are public
so
domain.
He's still talking to the director, like he's not like mad at him.
He does not, he's fucking done with Jarecki. He knows okay. Jarecki's the problem, but guess what, he's talking to everybody else on a prison line, and those
are recorded. All
recorded and public domain.
Yeah.
And so we hear all of it.
Okay
because he's talking to his lawyers, he's talking to Deb.
Yeah.
He's talking to all of his friends.
It's oh, Deb is still around.
Oh, Deb is very much still around.
Okay.
I really am very mixed, complicated. I want to call her a roach at one side of it because she survives the whole thing. But yeah. I'm just like, I don't want to be disrespectful either. And frankly, I'm afraid of her. 100%.
Frankly, she scares me.
Okay, so we are now talking about the trial of Susan Berman.
Okay.
Prosecution's argument is that Durst killed Berman to silence her about his involvement in the 1982 disappearance of his wife, Kathy Durst.
Yeah.
The key evidence includes the cadaver note, which comes directly from the jinx. And another critical piece of evidence was being able to put Bob in the Los Angeles area at the time of her murder.
Okay.
So they knew, and he admitted, because I talked about it earlier, that he married Deborah.
Yeah.
And then he flies, or he buys a ticket to fly to California.
Okay.
So they knew he was in San Francisco because that's where he flew. But not until the trial.
Yeah.
First of all, actually, Bob is interviewed about this at some point, and they were like, oh, well, like, we know that you were in California. Like, so the prosecution's argument is that Lewin and his team argued that he killed Susan to silence her about his involvement in the 1982 disappearance of Kathy Durst.
Okay.
The key, oh yeah, we were talking, this key evidence is
the note.
Cadaver note. And being able to put Bob in
California.
Los Angeles specifically at the time of her murder. Because
okay.
they already know that he was in San Francisco because he had bought a purchased
plane
a ticket to,
okay.
to San Francisco around the time. And when he's interviewed about this earlier in The Jinx, he says, California's a big state. With a fucking shit-eating grin.
Interesting. Did they have some sort of falling out? Or
him
something?
Him and Susan?
Yeah.
I don't think it's known exactly what happened.
Okay, because if she's been his confidant yep. for so long, and that thing that happened with Kathy, the murder, was like 20 years prior.
Yes. She was up hard. And
her
investigation
money.
Into Kathy's murder had been reopened, remember, around 2000. It was reopened in 99.
Got it. Okay, I forgot
and
about
it
that.
It was made public in 2000, and then she dies later the year in 2000. And so I think it was pretty obvious that she was going to be interviewed.
Yes, okay, that makes more sense.
Maybe there was...
To shut her up.
It's either that she suggested...
If you don't give me money.
Potentially. Potentially he thought maybe things were cooling off and she might. Maybe he had someone else in his life, in his ear, saying, This is a loose end.
Interesting.
And maybe...
That seems to make more sense, because if he really has that much money, why not just pay her off? Not to be like the villain in this moment.
No, if he had just given her money and she continued to toe the line for him, we probably wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Something happened.
Yeah, and I don't really want to say on right, recording.
We can't speak.
But I think it's possible that he had someone in his life that was like...
Yeah, hinting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
And maybe also that they knew that she was going to be interviewed, and maybe also that she could have suggested that.
Yeah. Maybe she was like, hey, if you want to.
You should, after we have this conversation, maybe if you are bored, you could watch season two. And then I think it will put a lot of this together, because.
Put some context in there.
A little bit. Things are suggested and hinted at that I'm not super comfortable talking about.
Right.
But also aren't explicitly discussed. But there's a lot.
Yeah. And that's the hard thing with a lot of these documentaries, is sometimes there's some subject matter that isn't confirmed.
Exactly.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay. Reasonable assumptions.
Yes.
Healthy or educated guesses.
You know what they say about assumptions, though.
That's true.
You make an ass at you and
me. Which is why, again,
we're not going to talk about it.
Certainly, people are still alive. Yeah.
So. Okay, I was just curious if there was something that happened.
Okay, like I said, there was a lot of interesting evidence they found out about Susan that they could have used as further proof that she was complicit and knew about Kathy's disappearance.
Yeah.
But Lewin, like I said, was careful not to paint her as a total monster. What I'm talking about is that piece of recorded conversation between Susan and this journalist.
Sort right,
of
like, where they're fabricating the story.
They're just talking about, like, okay, what do you think happened to her? And it's, oh, well, she didn't run away. Nah, she didn't run away. So do you think that, like, maybe, like, it could have been, like, a kidnapping? And it was like, well, yeah, did she have any, like, jewelry on? She's like, oh, my God, yes. She, like, had this, like, big fancy pair of earrings. And Bobby kept telling her not to wear the earrings, and so that's it. That makes sense. Yeah, that must be what it is. She was kidnapped, and then something went wrong.
Okay.
And then there's this moment where she's like, oh, okay, well, I'm saving my tears until I know it's official. And there's also on the call, she's, I don't want to talk about her in past tense, because I know that she's, it's like a woman pretending like she gives a fuck about this missing woman.
Yeah.
Knows exactly what happened. And she's coming up with a narrative with a reporter friend of hers.
To put some doubt in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then all of that gets printed, and it worked.
Interesting.
And it's sick.
It is sick.
Frankly.
Yeah.
And ugh. Again, so it's hard for me.
Do they talk to the journalist?
I don't know if they do.
Interesting. I would love to hear
what he thought about that.
Yeah.
I don't think they do.
Huh. Okay.
Okay. So in this trial, the defense's argument is that it was insufficient proof. You got nothing.
I do. What they say. I have to say, I don't know if a no is going to stick. It's a very compelling no. And then, like, the confession on the jinx is also very compelling. But as some, like, playing devil's advocate, like a defense attorney, you could put a lot of reasonable doubt in both of those.
Yeah, so I think that the reasonable doubt definite for me is the guy that, like, broke into her home, like the manager dude, because he also signed his name. But that's not great.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
But I think John Lewin is really good at his job.
Okay.
So he has, and I didn't really talk about it in detail, but, like, the thing that I think that sold the jury is that there was a woman on the stand as a witness who was married to Robert Durst's, like, kind of family or longtime lawyer.
Okay.
And the lawyer wasn't his criminal defense lawyer.
Yeah.
So he hired the same team that he hired in the Texas case.
Okay.
Who won last time.
Yeah.
But it was also quite a few years later. It did not go the same way. Spoiler alert, he does not win this case.
Okay.
He is
interesting.
Convicted. Okay. But, like, he spends $12 million on the defense for this case alone. And it was not a high-tech defense. I doubt OJ spent that on his defense.
Yeah, that's an insane amount of money.
It's an insane amount of money. Deborah is, like, harping on him the entire time. This guy is not doing a good job.
His job, yeah.
She's hired her own criminal defense attorney.
For him?
Separately for her.
Oh.
It's interesting. I know. That is interesting.
That is very interesting. Okay.
She has her own attorney. She's these guys, Dick DeGaren is his attorney's name. Mm-hmm. Dick is not pulling it out for you. It's not going well. I didn't mean that intentionally. And I feel badly because I feel like, okay,
don't feel bad. That's fucking great.
I feel badly because he did lose this case for Robert Durst. But I think he was so fucking over him. He was like, this man is guilty. Okay.
Do you think he grew a conscience?
No, it's trouble. I think it's hard. I just think that they're over his shit. It's obvious they're over his shit. They don't have much to work with because he's obviously fucking guilty. And I feel like they're mailing it in. But like I said, he pays a staggering $12 million.
Okay.
And it was like a fucking embarrassment.
Yeah.
But while John Lewin, the prosecutor, has this woman on the stand, the lawyer's wife, which is not Dick DeCaron's wife. It's a different lawyer that's just like his lifetime friend. They grew up together.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, this is my quote lawyer. And the reason they did that is because it's assumed that like this man and his wife both knew more about
everything. Okay.
And so since he's technically a practicing lawyer, if we call him one of my lawyers, then he's got attorney-client privilege. And so does his wife, who is on his payroll.
Interesting.
As like an assistant or whatever.
Okay.
But like the judge in the LAPD, the LA case, was like, okay, let me hear like all of your, like the recorded conversations.
Yeah.
So they basically did not want all of these recorded conversations while he's been in prison to be evidence.
Between the lawyer and the wife and him?
Yes, the lawyer and the wife and him, because it's attorney-client privilege. So the judge listens in and he's,
okay,
this, you guys are just talking about like the TV guide. Like they're just friends.
Yeah.
So this is just a ruse so that these two people can't be subpoenaed to testify.
So Robert in prison maybe says some stuff to these people that is maybe not necessarily gonna look good for him,
and he's known them for years,
a very long time,
and then
he's trying to say like attorney-client privilege,
so they cannot,
you can't testify, but the judge listens to their conversations, like,
and it's like, this doesn't make you his attorney.
No, you're not his attorney. Even though you are, an attorney, you're not his attorney.
No.
Okay. And so that's why
they bring him on stand. His wife are called to the stand.
Okay.
And his wife cracks. John Lewin cracks her, and she basically admits that she did know he was in LA, and he was staying at the Beverly Hilton at the time of Susan's murder.
Oh shit. Okay.
And I feel bad for this woman. Her name is Emily, and she's known this man for 30 years, loves him. Like, he's just got a lot of people that like he's bought off and taken care of and has been good enough to that all these people feel loyal to him.
I'm sure the son that turned in the note probably felt a little bad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's on camera crying about it when he's just like,
but like,
he
also
didn't want to believe it until he was faced with it.
Yeah.
He was like,
but also you killed fucking Susan.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. September 17th, 2021, he's found guilty of first-degree murder, and a month later, he's sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Bob's lawyers didn't even tell him about the verdict. Like, they...
Wait, was he not present?
No, he was not present. I think he was ill or something. We've still got weird COVID things. I think there was a reason he was not there.
I would... Sickness. Something, that's probably the only thing.
He's been having some health problems. He had some health problems at that point.
I mean, he was, born in 1943?
He was 78 at this time.
Okay.
So he's late 70s. He's also got a mountain of fucking the world of guilt on his shoulders.
Right.
And they're doing this thing for years, which is like, how frail can he be?
Mm-hmm.
So he's shriveled and sickly. And
Golden State Killer was same thing.
Yes. So he had a thing called like a shunt. So while he's being tried for this, so he's on camera in the murder trial, and he's got what is called a shunt, which is like something that they drill into your skull, and it's like a tube that drains fluid out of your like brain or out of the brain area in the head to another part of your body. So they made sure that it was like prominently placed and that you could see it.
It's not a snap-in toupee drilled into his head.
No.
Before.
Yes. That's a different kind of vanity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like that callback?
I did.
Thank you.
I hate that. Dave and I talked about that. That might have been the episode, actually. Talk about a callback. That was the one I was like, you need to listen to it because
it's crazy.
The toupee thing was insane.
Anthony Pignataro episode, if you're guys wondering.
Pignataro. Yeah. I love it. That's it. God. Okay, so they didn't even tell him. His lawyer skipped town. He don't even tell him. And they're interviewed in season two where they're like, hey, do you know how he found out? And the guy was like, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't know who told him.
Wow.
Which is like, really?
Zero fucks given.
They are. I told you they're fucking over his shit.
They got their bag and they left.
$12 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, fucking, you know what? You know this guy is trash. Go ahead and get yours. Like, I'm not...
If you can make sure he's found guilty, then yeah, go ahead and get yours. Like,
he's dying anyway. What can we fucking... What is the point? There is, like, this crazy scene where, like I said, $12 million on this defense. And there is a scene, I'm not joking you, from the trial, mm-hmm. where his 70-year-old attorney is rolling around on the ground. So they're doing this thing where they're pretending that they are Marcus, or what is it?
I am not picking up the wavelength. I'm so sorry.
They're doing this thing where they're like pretending they're Morris Black and Robert Drake's rolling around on the ground.
Okay.
And they're like, did it happen like this? Did it happen like this? And they're like rolling around.
And this was from the Morris Black?
Yes. You know what? Maybe the trial? $12 million is the two trials total. Okay,
but that's a lot of money.
It's a ton of money.
Yeah.
But it's just like... It's the two of them rolling around on the ground like they didn't even hire somebody, or they didn't do like an artist rendering.
Oh, like a reenactment.
They roll around on the ground to reenact it themselves in the middle of the courtroom in their fucking suits. It's embarrassing.
That is embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's pretty cringy.
It is super cringy. Oh, God. Okay. So he didn't find out until the next day when his wife's own criminal defense attorney Alan Abramson
called.
goes to the jail or the where he's being held,
yeah, and tells him
about it.
Wow,
I know,
but they really didn't give a fuck.
They didn't give a fuck.
It's a little poetic, though.
I think so.
It's like some poetic justice. No, I don't feel bad for him at all. It's like when you watch a villain in a movie and everyone just slowly turns on them and yeah. they're just left alone. Exactly. It feels like that.
Yeah, it's like Training Day.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Okay, so January 10th, 2022, Robert Durst dies of cardiac arrest at the age of 78 while in prison. Hooray.
Rotten hell.
Yeah.
Sir, with your shark eyes.
That's a small hooray, because yeah. what I'm about to tell you is the fucking worst.
Oh, no.
I've got a title here for okay. myself. It's called The Trash Ending. And although this is not the end of the pod, but this is the trash ending of the situation.
Okay.
His conviction was abated. Which means it goes away.
Okay.
Legally. Because he died before it went through at least one round of legal appeals. So technically, legally, and on the record, he is not a convicted murderer at all.
Really? I didn't know that. Is that like an LA thing?
It's an LA thing. Or a California thing.
So even if like you're found guilty of something?
If it doesn't, it has to go through a round of appeals.
It has to go through a round of appeals.
Yeah.
Do they just assume that everyone appeals something?
I think so.
What the fuck?
Or so it's your right to do.
But what if you never do that? Then you're never found guilty of murder?
I don't know.
Weird.
And maybe you have the right to an appeal. You have to waive the right to an appeal. Maybe there's like a...
Oh, okay.
But you never had the opportunity to waive the right to an appeal. And or you never got the opportunity appeal. To file an appeal.
So he's never found convicted of Susan's murder.
Yeah, so it was September 2021 when he was found guilty. And then he died in January 2022.
It all seems like a little bit poetic justice... For in Susan's case, because she was maybe complicit in everything, and
I know he killed her. But that was the one thing that I think Kathy's family was like
helping for,
because they couldn't prove that he killed Susan.
Yeah,
if they weren't really able to prove,
that he did something to Kathy.
Yeah, because that was the motive. So I think it was important to them.
That's unfortunate.
I know, and he did kill Susan. And that's
awful. That just sucks because it's like.
This is the trashiest way it's going to fucking go.
It could be trashier. He could have just been found not guilty.
That's a good point.
He could have died in like a beach somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least he died in prison. But it's one of those things where like, you know what happened. You know that he did something. But he's never seen his day in court. But he's dead. Or do you feel closure? Maybe not.
I think this would disrupt your feeling of closure, for
sure.
Yeah,
I guess so. I don't know. That's fucking wild, though.
I know. Which is, he fucking weaseled out of it.
He weaseled out of it again.
Yes, he did.
No matter what.
Ugh. All right, so this next part. It's hard because like I said, when I saw you this morning, or mm-hmm. today, I was like, I wanted to, like, read over my thoughts because I want to make sure I get this part right.
Yeah.
But I didn't have time. And so I'm not sure if it makes a lot of narrative sense.
Okay.
There's a lot of information here. I've got one more page.
Okay. That's fine.
But we'll go through it. So I might repeat myself, but there might be some callbacks.
Okay.
All right. So before we get there, February 2022, Kathleen's brother, Jim McCormick, and his family, he's leading the charge for this, have filed a wrongful death civil suit. Because what else do they have?
Yeah, for sure.
For $100 million against
Durst.
Bob's estate.
Okay.
All right. So in season two, we meet a lot of people in Bob's life who enabled and supported him in evading arrest for his fucking lifetime of crimes.
Totally.
I have done a little more talking than I thought I would. I won't waste my breath talking about any more of them. But what I do want to do is talk about his second wife, Debbie.
Okay.
Okay. So to recap.
You've definitely been like going up on Deb.
Deb. So to recap, December 11th, 2000, Robert married his second wife, Deborah Lee Sheridan, in a hurried ceremony. Mm-hmm. No reception. They didn't even spend their wedding night together.
Weird.
They did it in a rabbi's office in New York City.
Like a synagogue or something, yeah.
In New York City, an office in New York City.
Okay.
The next day, December 12th, 2000, he purchases a one-way ticket to California that he used to go and kill Susan. Their relationship is complex. Deborah has been managing his finances and has remained loyal despite all his legal troubles.
Okay.
Throughout the year. Years.
Uh-huh.
So it's like 2022 when he dies, and they married in 20.
Yeah, they're married 2000. Like 20 years.
At least. 20 years.
Yeah.
And she met him in Oh, I'm going to talk about this in a bit. Okay. Yeah. So it's unclear if they ever lived together. If their relationship was romantic, and I think it might have been at the beginning, seemingly was very short lived.
Okay.
In fact, Deborah had a long term relationship during her marriage to Bob with a man named Steve Holm, who effectively was her real
partner.
They were out in society together. They were known together.
Yeah.
Steve passed in 2019, and Deborah was listed as in his obituary as his wife.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So this was a business arrangement with Bob.
In some shape or form.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's in the deposition in Jinx season two kind of talking about like... So, like, he calls in one of those prison calls. He calls and Steve answers the phone and he's like, hey, how you doing, Bob? How you doing? And he's on the phone with Steve and he's, oh, I'm in jail.
You know, been better.
Yes. And he's, is Debbie there? And he's, yeah, she's here, Bob. All right, take care of yourself. And then he hands Debbie the phone and they have a conversation.
They're just, so
it's
talking.
Like, this is it's not a secret.
Yeah. Is it like a lavender marriage?
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay.
Because she does, they ask about it. Like, how about Steve? And she said, I asked Steve if they basically are like,
no, did you Steve? I'm talking about Robert.
Oh, I don't know. Is he gay?
Is he gay?
Is he closet? Is that the reason he was so angry all the time anyway? I don't know.
Is he just like
I think he either
repressed gay man and just never manifested.
Know. Possibly. It's, okay, I don't know.
Sorry, I don't want to open the can of worms before you finish your things.
It is a can of worms, but I don't know.
Okay.
But it's acknowledged that she was married to him out of convenience, and she knew that if they didn't stay married, then she couldn't inherit the money.
Right.
And she agreed to stay married to him, and he was cool with that, and so was Steve.
And she had known him for a very long time.
She'd known him both for a long time.
Yeah. No, I'm saying, but she had been like a part of.
Not for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
She was the chick.
It's interesting that it would be Deb.
When Susan was there?
For this arrangement and not Susan.
Okay, well, this is what I'm saying. There's an interesting pattern that is created. Yeah. Because sort of the way Susan stepped in and was loyal and covered and was deeply jealous of or
Kathleen.
Like dismissive and had this weird loathsome energy of Kathleen.
Yeah.
Similarly, almost exactly similarly.
She had the same thing towards Deb?
Yep. Debbie has the same thing towards Susan. So now Debbie's covering for Bob in the same way. After Susan's murder.
Weird.
Yep. Very weird.
There is something else going on here.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
And if you'll watch season two, there's a woman that's like kind of tangentially involved. She's married to Bob's other best friend. Mm-hmm. This guy, his name is Nick Chinga Chavin. He's like some fucking loser. Not a fan at all. but he's married to a very intelligent, normal woman who hated them and was like, I don't understand why my husband's like close to them, but yeah. I was very close to them. She worked for Deborah for a while. I'll talk a little bit about it, what it was like to work for Deborah.
Okay.
And she definitely thought that Bob was guilty the entire time.
Yeah.
And after Susan was murdered, she says she called Deb just to check in, and Deborah was like, she wasn't loyal to Bobby, and she immediately starts talking trash about her, similarly to the way
that Susan
threw Kathleen under the bus. It's so sick and interesting.
It's fucking weird.
Very weird.
Yeah, okay, keep going.
Okay, so they met at a charity event in 1987, and at the time she admits to going through a divorce and was, quote, this was her first marriage, mm-hmm. And was, quote, having trouble with her business.
Okay.
And the business was an all-female commercial real estate group, which was lauded at the time as, like, a feminist movement. But in reality, the firm was very steeped in misogyny, and it's my opinion that it was a ruse to attract... use the women to attract male clients.
Gross.
And there was a lot of things about, like, they had to wear certain things. They had to look a certain way.
Yeah.
They had to act a certain way. She said one of the women talks about having to line up every day and lift their arms above their head. And Deb would come around and sniff all of their armpits to see. And if there was any scent, then they would just send home for the day. It was just like a weird, like, sick, disturbing, yeah, misogynistic sort of, like...
It's weaponized femininity or feminism.
Completely yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, she also wasn't paying her agents at one point,
yeah,
and ended up filing for bankruptcy so that she wouldn't have to pay out any settlements after there were suits.
What the fuck?
Yep.
That's gross.
Stay in gross. Before his death, the two of them had definitely planned for a potential lawsuit from the McCormick family.
Okay.
And to prepare for that, they created a trust, and they basically spent all of his money buying up tenement buildings in New York City. She's purchased potentially more than 30 buildings.
Okay.
Since his arrest in 2015. In 2017, two real estate firms owned by Sheraton and her son.
Yeah.
So she's filing these suits. She filed a $10 million defamation lawsuit against her own tenants. Like I said, 30 buildings.
Wow.
Because the tenants had accused the firms of being slumlords and engaging in unethical practices. So like, before when I said, like, what Bob, yeah, and his old bestie did,
uh-huh,
she sort of recreated the model there,
yeah,
and was doing some of that. And now 30 buildings, and it's, like, early 2020, or late aughts.
Yeah.
People have a problem with that. And so she sued them for... defamation for even talking about.
Wow.
I know, this bitch is fucking gnarly.
Yeah, that's, you're right. Yeah. I feel like we can talk shit about her. Yeah.
Okay, so after his death, Deborah signed a statement claiming that her estimate of Bob's estate, this is a, because she's been sued, right? So, mm-hmm, she signed like an affidavit saying,
yeah,
that her estimate of Bob's estate after his death was under $100,000. With debts totaling approximately $250,000. So there's nothing left.
Yeah, like, I have no money.
But when Bob was arrested in New Orleans, the police believed he was worth more than $100 million. And we know he spent at least $12 million on the defense, so, right, over the years. So
the combined defense,
there's, yeah, at least $88 million.
There's money out there.
Deb claims that he spent his money and she doesn't know what he spent it on. However, there are prison recordings of him saying to her, here we go, I'm going to do Bob one last time.
Okay.
Debbie, Debbie, Debbie. He says it three times. What we're trying to do is spend my money. That way, if the McCormicks win, there's nothing there.
Wow. So she spent all the money on all these buildings, and,
yes,
then she's suing them.
She intentionally spent the money.
And then is going to turn around and sue all these people for defamation.
So if there's any money left, it is in that trust, which is a legally separate entity,
mm-hmm,
that cannot be responsible for Bob's actions, for which Deborah Sheraton is a trustee and a possible beneficiary.
Oh my god. I fucking hate it here.
She fucking grabbed the bag,
yeah,
and fucking ran with it, and she, well,
she found a
I've
way
got
to
a
hide
couple
it
more lines here.
Okay.
When asked in a 2022 deposition, was it worth it? Deb's response is, I think it was.
Yeah, for her.
For her. And today she lives at her mansion in the Hamptons and continues to fight the McCormick family over Durst's estate.
Oh my God. Does she also have shark eyes?
She's got great hair. There's one episode where he's like, they're talking and she comes to visit him. There's a lot of recorded filmed episodes between the two of them.
Yeah.
And he says, "Your hair looks very bushy today." That's a
compliment. Oh no.
Anyway, so she still had to deal with that dumbass for many years. Listen, I spent a lot of time this morning talking to Dave about this. Mm-hmm. We're just like, it's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
It's completely disgusting. And I would, it's crazy that I'm about to say this on a recording, but I think there, I would be fucking lying if I didn't feel like there's a part of me that doesn't get it.
I low key respect it.
I just gotta say, tip of the hat to you, ma'am. You did it.
Yeah.
You fucking hustled it. Yeah. And you, only you have to live with that and whatever's next here.
Uh-huh.
And you every night. Mm-hmm. And she seems unbothered by it, but whatever, you know, whatever, yeah, she'll get hers. But like that amount of money, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it respect? I don't know. I don't even want to say it, but maybe.
I think you can also, you can respect something and also equally be horrified by it.
Yeah. I would say it might have crossed my mind.
Yeah. It's fucking savvy. I will say that. Savvy is, I think, but it's also, you're savvy at the expense of
your soul.
Yeah.
This is selling your soul.
This is selling your soul at the finest.
Mm-hmm. And who knows? So why does she need a criminal defense attorney?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. She's like, hey, like, I'm not going to be lumped in with this, but just in case.
Right. She kept just like checking her bases with that defense attorney, being like, hey, is this, it's like, where does that end though? Wow.
That's it.
That's it. Snaps. You did it.
Oh my God.
I won't ask you to do it again until next year.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's going to get any better than that.
No, you did a great job. That was a more complicated story than I remember.
Uh-huh. Well, it's gotten complicated since the last time you watched it. It's gotten complicated.
Yeah, for sure. Well, good job.
Thanks.
You did it.
Thanks.
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
I guess it was fun a little bit, but only because, you know, I like love this like story.
I know. That's why I was like, you should.
So animated talking about it.
Do it. And like, you have in-depth knowledge of all of it. I could ask you a question.
There was stuff I did not talk about too.
I know. And that's what I'm saying. That's why like I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it and then tell you about it like I knew everything, because I know you fucking
okay,
do.
Okay, but I don't think this was like a burning thing on your list of things to cover. You're just like, I want to hear this bitch talk about it.
You know why I wanted to hear you talk about it is when you're like, I think you turned on one of the episodes from season 2.
Oh.
And I just heard you like chit-chatting about it. I was like, what the fuck are you getting all this information from? Is this in your brain? Yes.
Yeah.
And I truly, the reason why I wanted to do this podcast with you in general is because you're like deep dive into things.
Oh, sometimes, yeah.
Because you do have a really in-depth dive into like specific topics and things. And I was like, you know what? We could talk about this forever.
Yeah.
And we have. We've talked about it for a year. And yeah.
Well, there it is.
There it is. Have you thought about my question from last week about episode you would like to see solved or have some sort of answer to, or some that have stuck out to you?
No, but I definitely, it was the Anthony Pignataro case, which is the one I was like, I fucking,
the snap on toupee.
The true crime ones really do stand out to me a bit more.
All right, well,
but I had a blast.
And me too.
Happy anniversary, Beach.
Happy anniversary. Thanks for doing that.
You're welcome.
It was a big one. You did a good job.
It was a big one. It was a lot.
It was
a
lot.
I'm a little tired, but it was fun.
Yeah. Good.
Cool.
Yeah, but we will see you guys next week. We'll be back to the regular dynamic where I have to do something.
I was like, God, I'm not thrilled about being the one that has to talk all evening.
But yeah, I don't,
you did it.
Yeah, you did it.
Thanks.
Congrats. Like I said, I won't ask you to do anything until maybe that'll be our yearly thing. Just once a year, we'll make Meg do a story.
Oh my God.
Just keep right,
I'm gonna get you know, I better get...
I'll think of something else.
Okay.
I'll hear you talking about something. You're like, but that bitch knows everything about this one thing. And she has to do it again.
All right, well.
Yeah, but we will talk to you guys next week. Thank you for listening. And until next time,
stay grimly curious.
Bye, bitch.
Thank you so much for listening. Music by Alex Kingston and Adam McKinnon.
For podcast photos and updates, follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Grimly Podcast.
Be sure to rate and review, and we will see you next week for another episode. Bye, bitch.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.